Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts. The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
For the 59th time, we'll go twice round the clock with Daytona International Speedway. Hello everybody and welcome to the start of the 2021 International Sports Car season here in the US with the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship first round. It's like starting your season with the Super Bowl, isn't it? It's one of the very big ones. I'm John Hindhoff in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. There are five sets of Rolex Daytona Cosmograph watches up for grabs in 24 hours' time. We're just inland from the famous Daytona Beach, land speed records and plenty of racing there. But the 3.5 mile road circuit here inside the oval, well, this place was always thought of as somewhere for endurance racing. And, of course, the first meeting here was a sports car race. Of course it was. 12 corners make up the challenge that these drivers will be taking for the next day. Jeremy Shaw and Shea Adam join me in this part of the programme. We've got Johnny Palmer with us as well. Johnny and Jeremy with me here in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Our VP Racing Fuel pit reporter, Shea Adam, will be keeping us up to date with what is going on. And before we get to the start of the race, we've got a little bit of time. There hasn't been, of course, so much of the traditional build-up because of the current circumstances, so we can't easily talk to the drivers, but that hasn't stopped us. Our VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock Reporter Shea Adam has spoken to the man who will start the 31. That is the Whelan Engineering Cadillac, the red and white car, Pipo Durrani, and they spoke earlier on today.
It was another race win at Daytona International Speedway last weekend, but it didn't count as a race win. It counted as a pole position. Pipo Durrani, you know how to win this race. It's been a couple of years now since you got that Rolex. What is the difference, though, about starting on pole?
Yeah, well, Shell, like you said, it's been not a couple of years. It's been more than that, and I think it's about time. I won this race when I was just a rookie, and I think I've had numerous chances to be back here, but only one really in 2019 with a real shot of winning again. 2020 we had a good shot as well, but unfortunately we end up having a gearbox problem around 7 or 8 hours to go. So we're looking forward to taking this chance, to having another chance, and hopefully making this one stick. It's gonna be a dogfight, I think, a really, really difficult race with all the top class being so tight, and the teams and drivers just on a very high level. We are confident, but we are not considering ourselves the one to beat or anything like that. I think it's going to be very difficult. And we qualified pole. Like you said, what's the difference? I think just the fact that you are not starting around any other cars and you get to decide when to go, it's a plus. But in a 24-hour race, we don't think that makes much of a difference. But it's an honor for our sponsors and for our team and for Cadillac to have put the car on pole and show that we always go for everything we have.
In theory, there's 48 other cars out there that are slower than you. It's going to be a busy race with the four other classes this year. How are you expecting traffic to play a part?
It's going to be difficult for sure. Daytona on the infield, it's always very tight and narrow. So it will be a race of patience and a race where a lot can happen, as usual in a 24-hour race, but more so with more cars on track. And And hopefully, I hope that everyone has a safe race and most of it can get to the end in a way that you feel that you've done a successful race. But like I said, it's going to be a survival race, I think, all the way to the end. And then if you got to like 2 hours to go, then you're probably going to be one of the guys to fight for a win.
You and Felipe Nasr are always championship contenders. You're always got that asterisk next to your name at the start of the year because everyone's watching out for you. This race, though, you don't care about points, do you?
Well, I think it's very hard when you have such a race to start a season. You know, you want to think of the championship because this can set the tone for the remainder of the season. So, for example, if you look, last year we had a gearbox problem and it was hard to recover. We did eventually recover on points, but our season could have been so much different had we maybe finished second or third instead of seventh. So, but in other hand, you have a watch to win, and it's like the crown jewel of our sport. And I think it's difficult to say it right now. In a perfect scenario, you want to be in a position where you win the race without having much trouble or thinking about maybe fighting and thinking about the championship. So with that in mind, let's think positive. Let's think that we're going to be leading the race when it matters, and we won't have to think about that.
Pete Mohtarani and the number 31 Wheel and Engineering Cadillac leading the field around. Thanks for joining us on our Michelin Countdown to Green. Let's take a quick look at our Porsche keys to the rear. Shea Adam, we've been talking about this right from the wall. Rules, rule.
Read the rule book. It's a long off season. You've got a lot of time to study the rule book, to take notes on it. That has made a difference so far already in running at Daytona. They've been at it for more than a week now. You've got no excuses to read the 160 plus pages, or to at least have it on your computer so you can control F any answers you have at any point in time. But read the rule book, pay attention. That's the difference between winning the race and getting a penalty that'll take you through the pit lane and take you flat out of it.
Well, and Jeremy, that's a good point, isn't it? Because pits perfect is my second Porsche key to the race. You're going to be in and out the pits quite a few times in the next day. Jeremy.
Many, 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 many times. That's exactly right, John. I was talking to Mike Hull, who's the longtime managing director at Chip Ganassi Racing. The last time they were in this series, they were running GT LM cars. They made a pit stop around about every hour. The last time he was in running a prototype car, which was what, 5 years ago now, again it was around about pit stops a bit every hour, you know, around about that at least. So now they're going to be making pit stops at least every 40 minutes. That requires, he says, a completely different mindset, and that is something that the Chip Ganassi team has worked extremely hard on, as of course have all the others as well.
Joining our broadcast crew in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre once again, Johnny Palmer. Johnny, third Porsche key there is for you. Pick your passes. We're not talking about soccer here, but you've got to make it decisive and make sure you get it right.
So many times in the past, John, there've been moves into the first corner, let's say, into the bus stop, and they've been half-hearted, particularly in the final 3 to 4 hours of the race. You can't afford to make the stewards question that and potentially give you a penalty. So you've always got to be thinking, and in those middle classes, that's even more tricky, looking in the mirrors and in front at the same time.
Jeremy Shaw, High Noon is my penultimate Porsche key to the race. When we get to midday on Sunday, there's 3 hours and 40 minutes to go, and that's when you're really going to know exactly where you are and what resources you've got left to push with.
Yeah, up until that sort of time in the race, you've got to be a little bit cautious. You're not driving 100%, but around about noon time, that's, as Lewis Hamilton would say, that's hammer time. That's the time to get going. You know, no holes barred after that. Get on it and try and get this race win. It's all important, the Daytona chronograph.
Shit, Adam, the final Porsche key to the race is yours, and the tyres.
And the tires. We have a set tire allocation for each class that began at the beginning of the race meeting, which was the beginning of the week. 38 sets for the DPI and LMP2 categories, 37 sets for GTLM, and then 30 sets for each of LMP3 and the GTD runners. It means that you can use these tires whenever you'd like them, but some of the teams have sat out some sessions and have run less on the new tires and more often on old tires to keep the powder dry for the race.
It's our Porsche keys to the race. We'll revisit them. Good to hear Johnny Palmer's voice in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre again. He's going to stay with us for this opening stanza of the race. Let's take our first VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock report. And if you're a Mazda fan, share, Adam, this is not good news.
Not good news at all. Oliver Jarvis had trouble selecting first gear when trying to roll out for this pace lap. Did manage to get it done, but the crew is worried that it will be a reoccurring issue. They need first gear every pit stop of the race.
So no number 55 there. It's Felipe Nasr behind the wheel of the 31 wheel and car as he brings the field around. He'll have Loic Duval alongside him. He has taken up the position that would have been occupied by the white number 55. It's the darker grey car as they come to the line, and we're green for the 59th running of the Rolex 24 Hours at Daytona. The cars streak underneath the tri-oval, through the tri-oval, underneath that commentary position and down through the back kink chicane. And it is the pole sitter, Felipe Nasr, down for the first time into the hairpin at the International Horseshoe, side by side. That looked like we had the Ally Cadillac racing car and Jimmy Johnson trying to make up some room there. Also trying to get a little bit racing. Renger van der Zander in the Cadillac Chip Ganassi racing car. Those are the two lighter racing Cadillacs. The GT cars have also just gone across the line behind the two other prototype classes. And as they head on to the start of their first lap on the infield, it seems to be all as they were when they went across the line. And we've had a spinner. We've had a spinner. Just as I say that, I've cursed one of the cars. It was the number 79, I think, that's gone around. I'll wait for confirmation of that. That's the WeatherTech Racing Ferrari. The Cooper McNeil car, yep, it's got damage at the back as well. So either has had some contact which spun the car, or indeed that was as a result, and some contact on the hard edges of the circuit. But at the front of the field, it's all clear and plain sailing for the number 31, which started on pole position. They've spread out nicely around the track with that split start, Jeremy. That at least worked very well indeed.
Yeah, they did. That was a really good move there by IMSA to make the call. Actually, we've been talking about it for ages, haven't we? So they've listened to us, I think. Don't you reckon? Yeah, something like that. No, nice sensible start here. Yeah, no one is prepared to push too hard at this stage in the race. They're quite happy to let things settle down. Having said that, Felipe Nasr, he will look to extend his advantage if he possibly can. But again, he's not going to push the car too hard at this stage because there's so much can happen. There will be full course cautions. So even if you pull out a big lead now, you're going to get reined back in again. So try and save some fuel. Go as long as you can before you make your first pit stop of the day.
Jeremy Shaw, he's with me and Johnny Palmer in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Shea Adam is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. Just a quick note, if you've only just joined us for the international TV stream, that there has been an enforced driver change in the Allegra Motorsport car. Michael Di Casada has been replaced by Mike Skeen. Di Casada's grandfather being honoured on that car with a special sticker, but Michael, unfortunately, poorly and not able to take part in the race. So, Johnny Palmer, we're off and running, and I know you've been watching as much as you can in the early stages, but really your first opportunity to see some competitive running as part of the team. You do get the feeling of Daytona being an event, you know, even when there are fewer people here. JP, can you hear us? Well, we'll try and get back to Johnny in a moment or two, as already Ollie Jarvis is working his way through the traffic. And keep an eye on that number 55 car. Remember, it had to start from slightly further down. And wow, the 79 WeatherTech cars had a wild opening lap with damage right in the middle of the rear bumper, and then coming through out of turn number 5, the Western Horseshoe, and in the short chute to turn 6, very nearly getting picked up by, I think, was that the Paul Miller Lamborghini, Jeremy, that was shuffled off the circuit and then came back in?
I think it was. It certainly looked like it. Yeah. Yes, John.
Already in the pit lane. Shea Adam, you have some business. You have a pit caller.
Because of the late driver change for car number 28, they have to serve a drive-through penalty for changing the driver after the official grid was issued. And Mike Skeen is currently on a plane heading to the track. He's slated to arrive around 10 p.m. tonight, but Mike Skeen is not allowed to do any night driving because he did not participate in either of the night sessions or the Roar. So that means that Mike Skeen's drive time will all have to come tomorrow morning in this race.
Wow. All right. So that's some shuffling around for the team to sort up. And it was indeed Madison Snow in the number one Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini, the 48, their full season number, appropriated this weekend by Mr. 48, Jimmy Johnson. That's why it's on their car. Although, in fairness, they did win their class here last year, so I sort of think the number one's quite appropriate for them as well. Although they weren't the series champions last year, of course. GT Daytona next year. This time we'll have a GTD Pro and no GT Le Mans cars. We'll talk about that on the Haggerty Inside Track programme on Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. UK, Sound and Vision. Big change for the GT ranks as IMSA once again takes the lead and addresses the falling numbers of GT Le Mans car here in the United States. GTE Arm in particular at Le Mans and in the European Le Mans series still very, very healthy indeed. Get to some penalties in a moment, but we got another cracking battle going on for second place between Dave Cameron and the Mayerschenk Racing with Kerb Agajanian Acura. Yes, been a change in their manufacturer in the close season. Dave Cameron then in the 60 car and side by side with Loic Duval. Does get it done on the Mustang sampling car? No, he hasn't. Mustang sampling car thought he got that finished there before they got down to the kink, and then Renger van der Sanders had a good start as well, hasn't he, for the sort of chalk crayon coloured car, third of the four that are going up on the bankings. And then behind that is the Konica Minolta Acura, the number 10 car from Wayne Taylor Racing. So those teams taking over the Penske Acuras from last year. The Penske deal had expired and they both got a couple of cars in the close season and have rebuilt them. Has been that those cars have been, as I say, reallocated. Shea Adam, is this a clue to what happened early on to the WeatherTech car, as we've got someone trundling down the pit lane for a I guess a drive through is it?
May I do my best Joe Bradley impression?
Okay.
The 25 BMW started in line behind the 79 Porsche. The 25 BMW was handed an incident responsibility penalty for a drive-through, and the rear bumper of the Porsche is the bit that's damaged, and actually part of it is sitting at the exit of the bus stop.
And quite a lot of it is waving around in the airstream as that car goes through the kink. They'll have to come into the pits. They'll get a mechanical for that one, unless it can be flicked off and basically sent somewhere safe. It's hanging on at the moment. Well, actually, there's a bit of diffuser damage as well under there. There it goes. It's gone off at turn 6 towards the edge of the track, but that's a diffuser as well. They're going to have to come in. That car is going to be really difficult to drive, even for someone as experienced as Kevin Estra. It's off there. It's not off the racing line. It's one of the AMGs almost hit it. I think that was the Allegra car actually coming through there. Full course yellow. Our first one after just 9 minutes of racing in the 2021 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship season. It is the Rolex 24 at Daytona, and you're tuned to IMSA Radio and IMSA TV. Well, that didn't take long, Jeremy. Who had 9 minutes on the sweepstakes? Come on, admit it. I knew it would be you.
You know, I thought it was going to be, you know, with the split start, I thought, yeah, maybe it might be better this time, but oh no. Yeah, he was a bit unlucky there, certainly. He was, there were two GTD cars. I'm not sure why he was behind a GTD car's mind. But they were sort of fighting amongst themselves there, and Cooper was sort of in the wrong place at the wrong time. He tried to avoid him, accelerated past him, but was just clipped as he went through. It really was just sort of kind of one of those things, is what it looked like. Most unfortunate.
It shows, if nothing else, and sure, we know this because we've seen how quickly they can be replaced. Those rear bumper, that rear bumper and underfloor, effectively the diffuser underneath the gearbox, as it is, of the Porsche 911 RSR 19, although that car is updated to full 2021 spec. It's not held on by an awful lot of things. It's meant to be able to be removed and replaced quickly, but there wasn't enough just holding it on there, and it eventually gave up the ghost.
It's pretty much two latches and some screws that tends to hold it into place. I think the latches would be the biggest concern at this point, whether or not those were damaged with the bodywork flicking off. But you're correct. It shouldn't be that hard of a job for the Porsche to just sort of slat a new one on there. The question is, how many of those spare bumpers do they have? Because those things are expensive, and the factory team only kept two on hand.
It was quite a big schmozzle in the back of the GT field there, Jeremy, as they came to the line. And that was a much bigger hit than I thought it was, because that was a full spin that Estra was pushed into.
Yeah, indeed so. Yes, it was. It was lucky there wasn't more damage, I guess.
And that was the BMW, caused by the BMW, which came down the pit lane. But for the incident responsibility, well, take a bit of a breath early on then. Should have put a brew on if I'd known this was going to happen. You're listening to IMSA Radio, 107.9 FM around the track, Sirius 216, XM 202, around the US and around the world, of course, on the new home for all things IMSA broadcasts from us here at Radio Show Limited, www.imsaradio.com. And many of you have been there throughout the week, I know, and before, downloading the previews, listening into the live radio shows. And if you are in a territory that does not have a network TV deal, you can see pictures as well as listen to the sounds of us talking about our favourite thing, sports cars, for a very long time. So we've got the safety car out. And the Mazda number 55, remember, started out of position with a gear selection problem when they were trying to get out for the formation. And Ollie Jarvis has got that car going. And where's he got to in the field, Jeremy? He's just cracked the top 20, has he?
Yes, indeed. He did. But now, under this full course caution, I think this is a short yellow, because we were not 15 minutes into the race, but he should be able, I think, to pull his way through onto the back of the DPI field before we get ready for the restart. So this caution period, certainly good news for that Mazda.
So not even a quarter of an hour in, the yellows came out at 9 minutes into the race. We've got the debris cleared. I'm suspecting... I was sort of expecting this year to be a quickie yellow. They haven't opened the pit, they may not do that, but they are still going to do the class split and the pass around, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's normal. I think they do that mainly for safety reasons. So you know, they get all the what should be the cars at similar speed, similar places on the racetrack. That's kind of. I think they normally do a class split. They just don't open the pits and do the rest of the procedures.
I wonder if we might see, however, the number 79 with the Tech Porsche dive in the pits when we go back to green. Then Dave Alcock tweeting us at IMSA Radio. Hashtag, by the way, R24 Radio. So that's an aggressive weight loss strategy for Porsche. Shedding chunks of bodywork and underfloor in the first 10 minutes of racing. I think they're on a fuel strategy. I'll tell you what, there will be if they're trying to go around like that, Dave, because that rear diffuser, the reason that they changed the engine and the gearbox around on the 911 was to get a more effective diffuser under the back of the car, and it produces a whole lot of downforce for a very small amount of drag compared to other aerodynamic devices. And so Kevin Estre at the moment will be driving at somewhat hamstrung, and it will be no surprise that he has dropped down to 35th position behind the top six in GT Daytona, led, by the way, at the moment by the Lexus RCF of Frank Montecalvo, the number 12 car, ahead of Robbie Fawley for Turner Motorsport, the GRT Grasso Racing Lamborghini, 1296 and 111. Rolf Nation behind the wheel of the third place at Lambo. In GT Le Mans, it's Tom Milner ahead of his Corvette Racing teammate Antonio Garcia, 4 from 3 from 62. The Ricci Competizione Ferrari, and then John Edwards with the other two cars. Estre, as we said, further down. And of course, the team car, the 25 from Red BMW, has been in the pits for instant responsibility drive through. In LMP3, Moritz Kranz from pole position, and Müller Motorsports is leading in the number 6 from the number 7 of 47 Motorsports. That's the two Duquesne, the company formerly known as Norma, leading out from Rasmus Lind for Performance Tech Motorsport in the 38 and 3rd, and Carl Robinson for Riley in 4th position. In a very healthy LMP2 entry, and great to see this many cars out, it's Ben Keating from PR1 Matheson Motorsport in the 52 Wins car that leads out from Dennis Anderson from High Class Racing. The Orica's dominating there, 52 and 20, but good to see Chetinar Racing and Roberto Lecourt in the 47 Dallara sitting in 3rd place, 4th John Ferrano, 5th Sally Yulick for the Ligier. And at the front of the field, as we're ready to go back to green flag racing, it will be Felipe Nasr for Whelan Engineering Racing Cadillac, the red and white car, who has control of the field now in the tri-over. Loic Duval still in 2nd, Renger van der Zander up to 3rd in the lighter coloured 01 Cadillac, top 3 all Cadillacs, then the first of the Acuras, Dade Cameron for Meyer Shank Racing, and look further back down the field, 5th position Ollie Jarvis carving his way back through. So that yellow flag really helping out Mazda, and Ollie Jarvis already on the move, side by side with Philippe Albuquerque. In fact, he's gone through Jimmy Johnson's right there, and the Ally Cadillac as well. That's magnificent stuff from the Englishman, as he battled from early problems, couldn't get first gear when they need to move out the pit lane in that Alpine white number 55. And a spin in the prototype field, and that's the second place car, Jeremy, that's gone around there at the horseshoe.
I think you've just taken the lead, actually. That was Ryan Norman. Oh, and there's the that's the whole city car. That was the leader. That's Moritz Kranz.
Moritz Kranz in the blue and white car. They've come together, yeah. Jeremy, haven't they?
So,
and that must have been somewhere near turn one, because Moritz Kranz, or was it coming out? No, it was coming out of the horseshoe. I thought it was a little bit further on, but I think Kranz has got some damage to that car. There's right, what looks to be some kind of suspension damage maybe on that H&R blue and white machine. He's got a long way to go around. It looks like the steering isn't pointing where he wants to go either, Jeremy. So he's now going to drop a lap, and I think the other car is moving again, isn't it? So that might not be so bad.
I think so. I think Ryan Norman got away with that. The former Indy Lights driver And of course, defending series champion from TCR for the Michelin Pilot Challenge Series last year, along with Gavin Chavez. So Ryan making his prototype debut here this weekend, and what happened between those two. But it certainly looked a bit crowded as they were coming off the court, off for the turn, the International Horseshoe at turn three.
Yeah, so the 47 Motorsport, the Mueller Motorsport car, both in trouble and shit. We have had a pit caller, and it's one we were expecting in this VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock report.
Kevin Estra is still in the pits, as a matter of fact, as the WeatherTech Racing crew goes to work on the rear end of that car, trying to replace the diffuser. This is one lap lost so far. I'll keep track of it and let you know when it goes back out. No driver change planned at this point.
Indeed not. As Moritz Kranz pulls to the side of the track, heading into the bus stop. I don't think he's going to park the Mulder car there. I just think he's staying out of the way. Really smart work. Whilst the rest of the field comes through, he's desperately trying to stay off the racing line. In fact, driving on the grass. And actually, that's pretty heads-up driving for everybody's concern, Jeremy Shaw, because he doesn't want it to get in anybody else's way, but of course he doesn't want to get hit again either.
Yeah, that's very true, John. And what's amazing is, all of a sudden, the number four Corvette was running behind the LMP3s at the restart in 25th position. He's all the way up to 18th now. He's passed all of them. So it's Tommy Milner who leads GTLM, the 18th position overall. Rasmus Lind it is who now leads for Performance Tech in LMP3. Right behind him is Antonio Garcia from second wheel Corvettes. And then another LMP3 car, that'd be Gar Robinson in the number 74 car.
Great Porsche, Brumos Porsche convoy earlier on in the day today. Absolutely outstanding. Hurley Haywood, a big favourite of ours, one of my personal heroes. Time spent with Mr. Haywood is never time wasted, whatever the subject of the chat is. And down through the years, we've enjoyed a glass of pleasant white wine at various things that we've been at together or working together. It's been my pleasure to interview him a few times. I just love to hear his views on everything. And Brumos and Hurley were honoured earlier on with a parade of Porsche. Looks like there might be some front end damage to the 79 Porsche share as well, because they're looking at the steering on the WeatherTech car.
Yeah, and damage to the splitter of the car as well, as it was turned and nosed into the left side door of the Risi Competizione Ferrari. They do have a new door ready, by the way, in their pit box for when Alessandro Pierguidi comes in. They're not going to bring him in early, though. But that was a nose damage and tail damage. It was basically as bad as it could get for WeatherTech Racing. But they managed to put a new rear diffuser on that car, so that part at least is ready to go. The nose and the steering, on the other hand, will require a bit more work.
That's not a way to start, Jeremy. But, I mean, the only thing we've talked about in our Porsche case, the race, you don't want to be in the pits if you don't have to be. But they've got all the race to recover from that. Not the way they wanted their GT Le Mans season to get underway. We've got a spinner at turn number one for RWR Eurasia, and the recovery, oh my goodness, reversing right round the blind part of the corner. That's not smart at all for Sally Yolick, but he's run out of steering lock and didn't flick turn at the Turkish driver is in harm's way here. I think he should be able to get enough lock on to get round now. Yes, he can, and he's going to have to join carefully indeed, and does get going now. I think it was just a wee mistake from Sally. Also a problem for the Wins car, Jeremy, and that was a car that was leading its class.
Goodness gracious me, that was the LMP3 car. There's Ryan Norman also still making his way back to the pit lane in car number 7. That's another of the LMP3 cars, as Felipe Nasr goes across the line to complete his 12th lap. 1:35.031 for Nasr, fastest lap of the race, set on a previous lap by Renge van der Zander. 1:34.694. I mention that because that is only 0.2 of a second away from the race lap record. It was set by Felipe Nasr in 2019 and 134.504. Last year's fastest lap, 134.652, which is fractionally quicker than the lap turned by Rega van der Zander so far, and it was Rega set the fastest lap last year. So a good, really good, strong early pace here. Conditions, of course, absolutely perfect out there. I think right now it's nice, clear skies. The track is nice and dry, not too hot, but warm enough. So the track conditions are good, and the good speeds already being shown.
21 Celsius here, our friends at Michelin, for the track temperature. 19 in the air. And Shea Adam has a 47 Motorsports update on the number 7 prototype.
Not at all confusing to say it like that, is it, John? No, the car just went back to the garage. It sounds awful from my sources in the paddock. It is not a happy car, and it was being reported on race control chatter as spraying around the track, so that's not good. And also the number 4 Corvette, which was leading the GTLM category, you might have noticed a couple laps ago, Tommy Milner dropped down to 4th. He couldn't get out of 6th gear he couldn't shift up coming out of the bus stop, which is turn 6, and now they've had it corrected. It was one of those control alt delete things, but the worry is that that's going to rear its ugly head again for the 4 Corvette.
Extraordinary, Jeremy. I know these guys haven't had the perfect preparation because of everything that's going on right now, but we had pretty much trouble-free running last week at the Raw. They've had plenty of free practice time this week, and all of a sudden, it seems like the race cars, and in some cases the drivers, have forgotten how to do their jobs.
It does rather, doesn't it? Unexpected, you're right. By the way, you talked about the Wins car going round and being the leader. That was the LMP3 Wins car that went around, that had the spin, by the way, not the LMP2 car, which is also Wins sponsored. The PR1
yes,
Matheson Motorsports entry of Ben Keating, who does still lead in P2, running a very fine 8th overall for Ben, and he's already pulled out to 6.5 seconds over Roberto Lacorte in second place. We moved up to second place in that to Chetelar Racing Dallara. He's making hay while the sun shines here, is Ben Keating, quite literally. The other cars that are on move in GTD, we've now got a Lexus 1-2. Frankie Montecalvo leads. You talked about that a little while ago at the caution period. He was already in front. Aaron Tielitz, though, has moved up to second place in the class, the number 14 car. Third now, the pole sitter Robbie Foley. And then a whole train of cars behind him. I spoke to Aaron Tielitz just a little bit before the start from that Vassar Sullivan team. They're cautiously optimistic going into this race. They feel like they've got very, very good cars. They had a lot of success last season, of course, up until the last couple of races when it all went pear-shaped for them and he missed out on the championship, which was looking quite good up until then. But Vassar Sullivan right now 1-2 for Lexus in GT Daytona.
Hello to Jane Edwards, who's tuned in the UK just after 9 o'clock there, just after 11 o'clock in South Africa. And I've got to be slightly formal on this because I don't know what your first name is. G. Cronje is tuned in, accidentally discovered endurance racing back in 2017, fell in love with it immediately. I hope you're in for the duration then, G. Cronje, out there in South Africa. At IMSA Radio, if you want to get in touch with us, the hashtag is R24 Radio. R24 for Rolex 24 Radio. It's Jeremy Shaw, John Hindhoff, and Shea Adam with you in this first part of the session. Been a pretty decent one at the moment on the start and restart for Felipe Nasr. 34.8 last time around, getting into the stride. And this is exactly, Jeremy, what they will want to do. Get some good data in earlier on, make sure that they correlate with their fuel numbers, make sure that they're happy with their tyre wear once they get through to the first fuel stop. All right, we've had a couple of little interruptions, but for the most part, it's been nice and clean for them. Great overtaking through the traffic by Felipe Nasr. Porsche key to the race number 3 was pick your passes. That goes just as much, Jeremy, in fact probably even more, when you're coming through traffic as when you're battling for position.
Yeah, very much so. It's an art, and that's probably one of the differences between the pro drivers and the AM drivers particularly in the pro-am classes at LMP2 GTD. You know, the pros, they've done this for generally longer than the ams, and they are very adept at either overtaking without losing time or being overtaken without losing too much time. For the AM drivers, a little bit less experienced here, they're going to be a little bit more cautious because they want to make sure that they're not causing any dramas either for themselves or for anybody else. So, you know, that is definitely a factor. And you know, what makes a great endurance driver is, number one, looking after your car, probably, but secondly, and probably a close second, is making sure you can get through traffic cleanly with a minimum of fuss and time loss.
Delighted to say that Nelson Valkenburg is tuned in, hating the fact he's not at the speedway, loving the fact he can still listen and watch Job van Oytert and some other of his friends out there as well. And from the Netherlands, Nelson, nice to know that you're watching and listening Sound and Vision together. ImsaRadio.com, RS2 on our radio player around the US on Sirius 216, XM 202 and 107.9 at the track. And hello to everyone who we haven't been able to see because of the regulations at the track. Carol Dwyer, who is on duty in the foyer of the main building where we normally come up in the lifts. All of our friends as well, the gentlemen in blue who are the security on the 5th and 6th floor for our normal spotted in the booth. Unfortunately, haven't been able to say hello and have a chat with all of those. And Joe as well on the entrance to the Undercroft, who always has a chat with us when we're there. They always make us so welcome at Daytona, everybody from the front gate inwards. It's really great. 79. We have a penalty. Shea Adam.
They're still in the pit lane, John. They're still working on the front of that car, but more than the number of permitted crew members over the wall considered working on the car, which means that when it goes back out on the racetrack, we'll have to make a subsequent trip down the pit lane for a drive-through. That hurts.
Jeremy Shaw.
Well, yeah, it'll hurt, but, you know, the car's already losing many, many laps, so really an extra pit stop really isn't going to make any difference, to be perfectly honest. Of course, that WeatherTech car's been run by Proton Competition for the races this year, or in conjunction with Proton Competition, European-based team, not used, of course, to some of the rules here at Daytona. So a factor or not, I don't know. It could be just the fact they just wanted to get as many hands on deck to get that car where it needed to be. But I think the penalty itself, relatively inconsequential, unfortunately.
Wow, this has just been, at the moment, an absolute masterclass by Felipe Nasr. He's just over three and a quarter seconds up on the rest of the field. But what we've seen, Jeremy, haven't we, over the years, and particularly in recent years at Daytona, is it's a bit like one of those disclaimers at the end of an investment advert. Present performance is no guarantee of future earnings. Well, it's a bit like that. As conditions change, it may not be the number 31 Cadillac that has the best package, and it will get a lot colder overnight. Putting new tyres on, the cars will be slower to start with because they're not allowed warmers. The relative performances could change from all of these cars in all five classes.
Very definitely, John. And we'll have more than half the race will be run in darkness, or at least between sunset and sunrise.
Correct.
At least it won't be fully dark, of course, when the sun goes down. But yeah, there is a lot of time in darkness where the sun is not shining directly onto the racetrack, and the racetrack will lose quite a bit of temperature, and that temperature in the racetrack is critical for these tyres. So yes, you're absolutely right, you hit the nail very squarely on the head, and it is a big factor. Oftentimes we will see cars maybe in early stages looking particularly good, and then when it gets cooler, not so good. Sometimes the other way around. Of course, the best teams, they're good in all conditions, aren't they?
Well, yeah, 13 hours and 11 minutes between sunset today, just after 6 o'clock. So in just under 2 hours now, actually, and doesn't come up till...
Aren't they?
Sorry, say again, Jeremy?
Well, you're already long shadows.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. So 13 hours and 11 minutes. We had 13 hours and 16 minutes at Dubai a couple of weeks ago. And just as a point of put that in context, we were saying how much darkness we had at Le Mans this year because it was in September rather than in the middle weeks of June, and that had just over 11 hours. So a good couple of hours more between sunset and sunrise here. Bit of a battle going on between Alessandro Perghidi, who has got nearly within striking distance in that Ricci Competizione Ferrari to the Corvette number three that leads the race. BMW is in third position with their M8 GTE, the BMW team RLL car, and then, in fact, as I say that, Tommy Milner's just gone through. Actually, Milner's just gone back into third position in the number four, so 362 and four now. Corvette Ricci Ferrari and Corvette Racing C8R are your top three, but there is a battle on the infield at the moment with no traffic for a change ahead of them. The next car that they will come up to is the number six, which is already just going out onto the banking. So there's a big gap between themselves and Moritz Kranz in sixth position in the Milner Motorsport Duquesne in LMP3. That's the next car ahead of them on the road. And Perghidi doing a nice job at the moment, not pushing hard enough, Jeremy, to put himself in a position to pass. I'm not sure whether he can or he can't, but he just seems to be holding that gap at around about half a second.
Yeah, indeed. And you did stretch out just a little bit, but now not so much. And these battles are going to ebb and flow, aren't they, all the way through this race. It's certainly good to see that number four car back up to speed again there after the early glitch. About 3.5 seconds between the two leaders in GTLM, the Corvette and the Ferrari, and the Corvette and the BMW dicing for third position. We've already had problems again for a couple of those cars, but Bruno Spengler, he's about another half a minute back in the fifth position with the WeatherTech Porsche, unfortunately, still out of action. I was just looking towards the front of the field. There was a change three or four laps ago for fourth position. Two Acuras switched positions, and here we go for the first of the pit stops for the leaders. So it's number 10 ahead of number 60 as the third place car for Chip Ganassi Racing comes onto the pit lane.
And Shea Adam has this VP Racing Fuel Pit Paddock report.
Renger van de Zande with the first pit stop of the year for Chip Ganassi Racing in their brand new Cadillac. This is fuel and tires. Now, 38 sets of new Michelin tires for the week means that we should be seeing new tires at every pit stop opportunity for the DP category. These boys and girls know how to do pit stops. They're very well trained at it, and they've gone for a staggered option where they do the right rear and the left first front, and then the left rear and the right front last. So they're quite used to doing this. Some of the teams prefer to do one side at a time. Not Chip Ganassi Racing. It's the same way that they did their four GT pit stops, fuel tires, and Renger out for another stint.
There was also a pit stop just before those prototypes came in from the number one, Paul Miller Racing at Lamborghini. Madison Snow in and out quite quickly, Shea. Was that a problem for that car?
Nope, just fuel only. Madison was running in quite a bit of traffic out on track, so they elected to pull him in, give him fuel, and give him a bit of fresh air to go set some faster lap times.
Yeah, seems reasonable. One thing that we'll talk about when we get closer to it, Jeremy, but once again, the start of the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship also starts the Michelin Endurance Cup as well for all of the longer races this year, and there are interim points, almost like stage points, if you were watching a cup race, except we don't actually throw any yellows out at the various markers. Where are we set for those this year, and when are they handed out?
They are handed out at 6 hours, 12 hours, 18 hours, and then the end of the race. So that is certainly something the teams will focus on. A lot of teams have a big focus on the Michelin Endurance Cup. It's a good little carrot to get. Certainly last year, we were just talking about what is now running the number one car, Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini. Because of COVID, they did not take part as originally scheduled in the entire championship last season. Instead, particularly after winning the 24 hours at Daytona for Lamborghini, their concentration, their full effort was on the Michelin Endurance Cup. And each of the subsequent races, they just tried to score as many points as they possibly could. So they might sort of kind of run a kind of an alternate strategy in order to have good track position at those critical points in the race where the points are given out. And it worked out perfectly for them, and they came away with that Michelin Endurance Cup championship.
Hello to Barnaby Scarf, who's tuned in, and also for the first time at the watching the 24 Hours of Daytona, to Nicholas, who's tweeted at IMSA Radio using the hashtag R24Radio. And Rob Chalmers asks a question that I'll set somebody onto. Jeremy, you may know this already. Is the Chip Ganassi Racing Cadillac a brand new tub, or one of the cars that were previously run by Juncos or Spirit of Daytona, or a car that has got some other history?
It's the Juncos car, in actual fact, and that's the car that was damaged. You remember that horrible crash that Victor Franzoni had at Canadian Tire Motorsport Park, and then repaired afterwards. And repaired to absolute pristine condition. In actual fact, the Ganassi found out the car was available from Ricardo, and they made a few calls around, including one to Spencer Pigot, actually, who'd been the last guy to drive that car after the accident. Spencer said that the car was great. So they said, okay, fine, let's go get it. So that is the car from the ex number 50 Juncos car that's been run by Chip Ganassi Racing.
I've got a philosophical question here, and I know he's watching. Andy Blackmore, does Andy Blackmore have a spotter guide on the wall when he's watching, or does he know them off by heart because he's been working on them? Andy and Kira watching at the moment, and thank you for all your hard work, Andy, down through the years on spotterguides.com. Very good to know that you're still working hard, and plenty of his liveries as well in over the weekend that we've seen, both in Michelin Pilot Challenge and in IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, of which this is the first round for 2021, the 59th running of the Rolex 24 Daytona. And the WeatherTech Porsche, after some time in the pit lane, Shea Adam, is heading back out with a little wiggle of the steering wheel, looking as pristine as it did before it was attacked by the BMW. How long was that car in the pits? That seems to have been there for a very long time indeed.
13 laps, John, 13 laps total, and it's going to have to come back in and serve that drive-through penalty within 4 laps of going out on the track. And of course, when it comes in to serve the penalty, it's not allowed to stop in its box. So if something isn't perfect, they're going to have to wait at least another opportunity to try and fix that. But we've had a slew of pit callers. It was a poor stop for the Meyer-Shank Racing team, and they're accurate. They had trouble on the left front tire change of that car. It was a good stop for the other Acura, though, that one belonging to Wayne Taylor Racing, the ConocoMinolta Baron car. That one had a much cleaner stop. All of the Cadillacs came in. Everybody did fuel and tires, no driver change. But we do have a penalty for the 55 Mazda speeding on the pit lane plus 1 kilometer an hour over. It's a drive-through, unfortunately, though, for Ollie Jarvis, as the LMP2 stops are going on now. And I'm only seeing a couple of driver changes there. It's Gabby Aubrey in the 8 for Tower Motorsports, and Guido Vandegarde, welcome to Daytona Racing in the 29 Racing Team Netherlands.
Jeremy, so it looks like it's going to be about 20-ish laps. There was a bit of yellow in that run for the prototypes. Felipe Nasr actually came in at the end of lap 22, but there was 3 full course caution laps within that. So that's about, at race pace, that's going to be around about 40 minutes. So that one's easy to remember. What do we think about the P2s and the other classes? What sort of pit stop strategy are they running, if they're running to full beams?
P2 is very similar. GT cars round about an hour, round about an hour. So it's a big change, particularly for that Ganassi team. They were used to making pit stops around about every hour. Now they're making them every 40 minutes. That's a lot more pit stops during the course of this race.
A lot more
opportunity for things to go wrong, quite frankly, because the pit stops can be, they are super stressful.
And that extra that the 20 minutes less between those pit stops that you can't get a little bit of rest in when you get into the middle of the night. Remember, these crews don't nip off for 6 hours in the middle of the night like the our colleagues on TV do and leave us to hold the fort. 3 till 6 Eastern, by the way, is our Night Owls session this year with Rooftop Rear. He'll be taking over the TV coverage, and if you're in the US, you'll be able to see that without any block on imsaradio.com on the live video whilst we're providing you with the audio. But these crews, Jeremy, they're at the track for 24 and they sleep where they can, and I'm sure we'll see some shots. It's loud in the pit lane. They're not in pit garages as they are at Le Mans. They're under awnings, so it gets chilly overnight, but they'll still try and grab what shut-eye they can in between, hopefully, regular pit stops.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, and it's, you know,
it's hard,
not,
mate.
It's not easy. Yeah, it really is. You know, these guys work super hard. I mean, the commitment it takes to be a mechanic in this championship is amazing, really. And the guys, they work so hard, and there's, you know, they're really, really making a name for themselves. If something goes wrong, quite frankly, that's the honest truth about it, which is you know, not the way it should be at all. But they really are the unsung heroes of this sport, and you know, that's why the drivers go to such lengths when they get out of the car at the end of the race to thank the guys who do work so hard. It's a challenge for the lead.
Finally, as we said, as things come to change, is a new leader. Then that will be Philippe Albuquerque for the Konica Minolta Acura. Well, he was leading across the line, but Philippe Nasser held the inside, the left-hand side of the track going through turn one and into the infield. That's actually completely ruined the momentum that Albuquerque had, and that's given an opportunity to Renger van der Zander in the Chip Ganassi Cadillac. So it was Acura Cadillac across the line, but Nasser has got back into the lead, and now it's side by side between Albuquerque and Albuquerque and Nasser, and that one goes the way of Albuquerque. And just to show how close it is, Loic de Val says, "Oh, come on, you guys, you're having too much fun. I'll join in," and goes side by side with a little bit of an overlap coming out of the western hairpin as well. We were only seeing just before the pit stops, Jeremy, it doesn't stay the same for very long. What it would look to me then is that as the stint goes on and the burn off the fuel, that Whelan car is very good indeed. Now, he did get a good jump away at the start from the green flag, but he has been caught a little bit here by the rest of the leading prototypes.
Yeah, he has, and you know, I think, you know, we talked about earlier on, you know, no one's going to push too hard in the very beginnings of the race, and they were all kind of, you know, just sort of running along quite happily on their own, making sure that they're comfortable in the car now. But all of a sudden, that number 10 car has come alive, because, you know, it started in the fifth position, it ran the fifth all the way through until lap 16, when he managed to get past Dane Cameron up into fourth position. Then after the pit stops, he went two laps longer than the first car to stop, which is 0-1. The number 10 car went one lap further than the previous leader, which had been that number 31 car, and then he came out pretty much on his tail, and now he's challenging and or gone through into the lead. So
an XX problem, Jeremy. Excuse me, it's the Magnus car, new car for them, slightly different colour scheme, and it looks like a right rear issue. The tyre is down now. Contact. Question mark, I don't know, but it's you know, it doesn't matter how slow you're going, it's probably too fast for a tyre. It is John Potter who started the Magnus with Archangel number 44 Acura NSX in the Speed Racer livery, and he's limping back to the pits even as we speak. It happened just before, I think, he went into the bus stop. He's come through the bus stop, so he hasn't got too far to go. Shea will be keeping an eye on that, and the question for me is, did he get a little tap? No, answer no. That happened right in front of the 75 Sun Energy AMG GT, and they had to check right up. Meantime, the Dragon Speed Flexbox car has gone around at the bus stop, but is now pointing in the right direction. And again, just caught that one out the corner of my eye. Didn't see if he jumped or he cut. Was pushed. It's the Rob Hordes, Garrett Grist, Rinus Vike and Ben Hanley, number 81, Orica, that I was talking about there. And whilst we're talking about the prototypes, this from Hans, a question. He's a bit confused, he says. Why does it still say DPI? Shouldn't it be called LMDH from this year? Or is that launched from this year's 24 Hours of Le Mans? No, LMDH is the next generation of these DPI cars. That's the IMSA vision of the top class of sports car racing. The ACO have taken that on as LMDH. We won't see 2.0, DPI 2.0, i.e. LMDH ACO in ACO speed cars until 2023 here at Daytona. Theoretically, the class is eligible for WEC and Le Mans this year, but there aren't any of them yet. So the top class will be made up of the hypercars, as they're called, Toyota and Glickenhaus, together with a recycled Rebellion R13, which has been rebadged as an Orica that Rebellion obviously paid for, and that's been recycled as Alpine. So they will all run in the LMH category as LMHs in the top class. You really have to call that top class something different from hypercar when you've got an LMH and an LMDH within it, and I think LMP1 would be just fine. Let's go to Shea Adam with this VP Racing Fuel Pit Paddock report. Bad week for Archangel, Shea.
It is, and John Potter has managed to bring the Acura into the pit lane with that flat right rear tire, or what's left of it, I should say. But Archangel with Magnus running this weekend, or actually this week in Daytona, because we have to go back a full calendar week, with three different cars in three different series. It was a crash to start things out in the IMSA Michelin Prototype Challenge, as for the number 7 machine, the LMP3 car that they run there. Then yesterday in the Michelin Pilot Challenge, that's where I was trying to go, they were running in an Aston Martin that was actually a replacement car to their original car, which had an engine issue. That too had some right rear suspension damage to that car. So that means that all three of their cars so far this week in Daytona have been plagued with issues. Hopefully that's them done and out of the way. John Potter, a new tire and back out of the pit lane. Although there is some damage, some debris out on track. And I'm just hearing Potter's going to have to come back down the pit lane again. Penalty, wheel rotation while on the jack stand. That is a drive through.
The debris at the bus stop, there's a red and yellow rubbish on the track flag there. It can often mean slippery surface, as Jeremy and I know to our costs in our racing careers down through the year. But really what it means is there's something on the track that shouldn't be there. It could be fluid, it could also be bits of car as well. There is a word that sort of half rhymes with track and begins with CR on the track, but I won't say it. That's what I always think of that red and yellow flag for. And I think that was for some tyre debris from the number 44, tyre and bodywork debris as well. How time flies, Jeremy. We're 55.0 minutes plus into this race already, and it feels like we've done 3 laps in some respects.
Are you serious?
We are coming up to the first racing hour completed in 7 minutes' time. Can you believe that?
No, that's amazing. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? This is a really interesting start to the race. Also interesting, isn't it, that we saw the number 10 car of Philip Albuquerque briefly get past Felipe Nasr for the lead in the race. Since then, Felipe says, no. And he has checked out now. He's pulled out rapidly to a 7-second lead. The gap went out to 3 seconds, then four, then six, and now 7 seconds between first and second at the completion of lap 30.
Hello to Lucy Payne, team manager at BHK Motorsports, running LMP2s and LMP3s at ELMS. Simon Tibbett watching as well. He is one of the drivers from Zorg Rennsport BMW in a variety of the categories that we cover. This is a big race, Jeremy. This is exactly what this race always used to be, a real international feel, plenty of international drivers and manufacturers, and it's only going to get better. That question we were talking about with about LMDH, we know that Porsche and Audi want in to LMDH, and both in their press releases mentioned coming to places on the IMSA calendar, as well as racing in the World Championship and at Le Mans, like Sebring, like Daytona, and the opportunity, of course, for customer cars to do the full season. And we heard earlier this week that Acura are going to continue in the top class here with a commitment to the new DPI 2.0 LMDH from 2023. It's a good time, despite everything going on in the world, for endurance racing. Change of position, by the way, as I was going through that, as the Philippe Albuquerque driven zero, Regan van der Zand, excuse me, driven 0-1 has just got by Philippe Albuquerque, so that's a new third place there. I'm really excited, Jeremy. This could be a time when we were all looking gloomy. We've got 49 cars here this year. We've got manufacturers recommitting. We've got new manufacturers coming in. We had a new Toyota in the Michelin Pilot Challenge yesterday, and it led the race. It's good, and it's good for IMSA.
Oh, it's tremendous for IMSA. I completely agree with you. Absolutely magnificent for IMSA. These are exciting times for sports car racing. This LMDH new regulations have really caught, I think, the manufacturer's eye. You know, it's very cost-effective in international motor racing terms. So I think that's why we're seeing already, you know, three manufacturers have jumped on the bandwagon. I'm sure we're going to see more over the next few months or so. And the bad news is we've got to wait a couple of years before we see all those cars. But it's great to see the manufacturers committing so early to it. And I think these are, you know, really the future bodes very, very well indeed. Another quick note, by the way, you talked about Philippe Albuquerque losing a place there to Renko van der Zande. So all of a sudden, Albuquerque has gone from the lead to 7 seconds back from the leader, and he's now lost two other positions. We need to keep an eye on that Konica Minolta Acura car number 10. I wonder whether the pit wall got onto him and said, look, you don't need to push too hard at this stage in a race. Just take it easy, throttle back, take your time. So that's something we'll follow up on and find out, hoping there isn't any sort of any difficulty for that number 10 car.
Andy Holbury, one of my former colleagues at Autosport Magazine, tuned in as well. He's been enjoying this week, wherever you are in the world. Good to have your company. 107.9 around the circuit. Sirius 216 XM 202. And thanks to them for loaning us their airwaves, not just for this IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship race, but we'll have the whole season on Sirius XM as well. And if you're further afield, imsaradio.com. Sound, obviously, because it's IMSA Radio, but also the live video tab with the full streaming international feed and our commentary on there as well. At IMSA Radio, hashtag 24, R24 Radio. Another set of stops this time for the GT car. Shea Adam.
We've seen a lot of fuel and tires put on the cars, not necessarily driver changes, although a couple ones worthy of note. In the GTLM class, we have now got James Pilato behind the wheel of the 62 Risa Competizione with the brand new driver's side door, so the impact from the side of that one is now missing. Simon Mann has taken over for Matteo Cressoni, who started the 21 AF Porsche Ferrari in the GTD class. Lawrence Vantor, making his GTD debut, is now behind the wheel of the FAF Motorsport Porsche. And that one is interesting because you've got Canada meeting Belgium. And as Lauren said, well, maple syrup goes very well on Belgian waffles.
coming down to the first hour of the race having been completed. We could have been somewhere near 35 laps by the end of the first hour, and we've had just that one full course yellow for about 8 minutes, so a big green since then, 42 minutes. So take a quick rundown of how things stand with a Mazda in race update. In GTD, we'll start with the cars with the green markers on them, and leading the category in 21st position overall is Allegra Motorsports in their Mercedes AMG GT3. They've just come into the pits for Daniel Morad, so they'll give that up. That will pass the lead to Maxwell Root for TF Sports Aston Martin. That's the number 97. Then in third position, Frank Montecalvo is in the pits at the moment for Vassar Sullivan and the Lexus number 12. His teammate's just gone through. Then it's the number one of Madison Snow. Then it's Jan Halen for Wright Motorsports. So they're in the middle of a pit stop cycle at the moment. GT Le Mans is much easier. Two Corvettes from the Risi Competizione Ferrari from Team RLL. And that's 3, 4, 62 and 24. They're just at the bottom end of the teens in the overall standings. LMP2, Ben Keating leads for PR1 Matheson Motorsport in the Orica at number 52. He's got about 25 seconds on Roberto Lecourt for Chetilar Racing in the Dallara number 47. Dennis Anderson in third for Highcast Racing has about 5 seconds on Frits van Aert in the Jumbo-sponsored Racing Team Netherlands Orica LMP 207. That's the 29 car. LMP3, it's Riley Motorsport that leads in the 91 Ligier from Performance Tech in second. About a second between them. Gar Robinson, 6.5 further back in third for Riley in the 74 car. Then the red, white and blue Sean Creech Motorsport machine in third ahead of John Bennett for Core Motorsport in the 54. And of course, I say that they start their pit stops. So at the front of the field, with an hour now completed, Felipe Nasr leads by 6.5 seconds from Renger van der Zander. Whelan Engineering from Cadillac Chip Ganassi, and the third place car is also a Cadillac 3101 and number 5, the red and white Mustang sampling JDC Miller car, ahead of the first of the Acuras in the hands of Felipe Albuquerque, the number 10 black and blue Conning and Minolta car, ahead of the light coloured Jimmy Johnson driven number 48. What other number could it be? Jimmy Johnson reunited with Chad Knaus, by the way. He's on the box for Jimmy, and working together again, those two, in the Ally Cadillac. And the top six made up by Dane Cameron, about another 20 seconds further back for Mearshank Racing with Kerb Agajani, and that is another Acura. That's how it stands, just over the hour of racing completed, and the next hour at the 59th running of the Daytona, 24 hours of Daytona, starts right now.